Welcome to A New Lens with Common Good Capital, where we talk with investors, RIAs, fund managers, and philanthropists about their experiences within different impact investing themes, as well as explore the power of stewardship and capital. I'm your guest host, James Brill, marketing specialist and podcast producer, and I'm here with Jeff Schaefer, a 24-year veteran of the financial services industry. He's co-founder and CEO of Common Good Capital, a financial services firm that aims to align capital with the values and goals of investors. Jeff also happens to be the host of this very podcast, but we are turning the tables on him today. Welcome, Jeff. Thank you for taking the time to talk with us.
It is a pleasure to be here, and I won't critique your intro at all, but you did a wonderful job.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yep. This is a unique experience for sure. I have lots of podcasting experience, definitely, but I've never interviewed somebody I work for.
Yes.
It's an odd situation for me.
So why is that odd?
I've just never done it.
Okay.
That's what makes it odd. I mean, I'm not like dreading it or anything like that. I'm just saying it's unique. You are definitely the host of this podcast, and it was inspired by your guys, I would say. I believe they actually brought it up first.
Yeah,
right?
They did.
They found out that I did a podcast and they're like, we should definitely do a podcast.
Yes.
And then maybe 7 or 8 months later, we started a podcast at Common Good.
Correct.
Yeah. So what was the breaking point for you? Was it just relentlessness from your guys or a feeling like you wanted to get more out there?
Yeah. Wow. I have to go back in my brain and think about it. So I would say, first of all, there's a whole compliance side of this in the financial service industry that it's like, oh, let's just completely stay away from that and you don't have to worry about it. But on the other hand, you have the world today that impact investing is becoming much more, it's been a trend that's growing, but you can't read the newspaper or listen to the news today without hearing something that relates to it. And so, you know, with the guys continuing to persist, it's like, you know what? We are in the mindset of trying to help advisors, investors think differently. Mm-hmm. And so the best way I think to do this is to hear people's stories about what shapes them. And then obviously how they think about capital and how they think about stewardship. And partly because that's the way I came onto impact investing. It was experiential and it was a process that brought me along. And so to me, if we could have a high level discussion with interesting people, I mean, who doesn't like to hear interesting people? And then when they get vulnerable and share meaningful things about them and specifically stewardship and capital, power of capital, I thought it'd be interesting. So we did it.
Yeah. It's one of those things where like the concept of stewardship or the non-financial side of impact, right? It's something that it's a story that numbers cannot tell. It's a story that a one sheet will never get across. The Yep. only way you get buy-in on kind of that emotional level as far as the power of impact, the power of applying impact to capital is by hearing people's stories, hearing how it changed them, et cetera, et cetera. I love that you finally decided to jump in. And as the guy who's heard every word spoken on every episode of this podcast so far, I'm loving it.
So you just said a word that was interesting, and you said the word emotion.
Sure.
So that personally means a lot to me. At some other time, we can talk about it. Not that I'm not willing to share with it now, but where I really wanted to go with this is when you grow up in the financial services industry, whether they explicitly say it or not, there is this idea that you need to leave your emotions out of investing. Why? Because if you bring your emotions in, you're going to do stupid things. And I think the discussion that we're having around impact challenges that very notion. And I would ultimately argue, I don't think you can get your emotions out of investing. So why not embrace it and say, let's bring in the positive emotions into investing and go off of that rather than, oh, we got to get, you know, fear and greed is just going to come in. You're going to do stupid stuff. Well, think about it. Half the job of an advisor is to help control people's emotions around it. And it's eliminating fear and greed. Well, why not bring in the positive side of it? And so it's interesting you bring up the word emotion because That's not something I always talk about, but it is absolutely a reason why impact investing can be so sticky and so powerful, because it's a head and a heart exercise.
And it's where, you know, I'm not Generation X, but I'm also not fully a millennial. I'm like somewhere in this like weird 5-year period, right, where I hang into both groups at my age. And I can definitely see a difference between my parents' perspective on investing versus my oldest sister's perspective on investing, who's like close to your age, with my little sister's perspective and like those friend groups. And I can definitely tell that over time, it's getting more emotional.
Yeah.
The younger they are more focused on, yes, I'd like to build my retirement. I'd like to build my future kids' future. But at the same time, I want to make sure that whatever I'm doing, I'm not damaging.
So if you were to talk to your parents,
sure,
what would your parents say about
it? They just never considered it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Whatever brought things back around as fast as possible. You know what I mean? Or long term, if you could show them that at the end of this 30 years, this will be your gain, most likely, they were headed that direction. Never bothered to ask,
right,
should I be investing in, you know, I don't know, Exxon, whatever, because Exxon was going to pay off through the 80s and 90s, you know what I mean, type of thing. Whereas I think younger people have a different set of questions that they're asking that just didn't exist at that time.
I wonder if it's because, I've obviously talked to my parents about this. It was never something that was presented to them.
Right.
So I agree with that. Yeah. I also wonder, my thesis is that we're realizing that governments can't fix everything.
Sure.
On the other side, we're realizing that nonprofits don't have enough money to fix it as well. And so I think where the millennials are coming at this is they realize where the capital and the influence really is, and it's in business. And so I would just tell you that as I've talked to my parents, obviously they're extremely supportive about it, but I've seen them change over time. And today, in fact, I had my dad call me up, 4 months ago. And he's like, I was on this call for the XYZ company. And man, that was really, really intriguing webinar. And I'm like, well, why? He's like, well, I really understand what they're doing from a financial standpoint, but now I really understand the impact that this can have. And so what went from him being a loving father supporting what we're doing at Common Good 4 years ago, I would argue the light bulb went on for him. And he's like, oh, I get it in a much deeper way.
Yeah. It's one of those things where it's just a new value proposition that just did not exist. It wasn't presented as, you should even consider this when considering where to put your money, type of thing.
Right.
And so, I don't think it's necessarily like a generational thing in that they won't understand it. It just wasn't a part of the thinking, for sure.
Well, and I think, even my generation, and clearly my parents, it was save, make as much money as you can from your investments. And then if you're so charitably inclined, give that away. And the irony about that model to me is there is a general assumption that a business is simply to make profit.
That's right.
And I don't really care if it's doing good or bad along the way. It's just going to, hey, let's make as much as we can, and then let's go convert it into good. And I think people today now realize, oh, wait a second, that business, whatever it is, has an impact on our culture, on people, and our world. And the notion that you somehow, if you do good, you can't also be a good business. That's all been challenged.
Sure.
But it definitely messes with your brain to go, wait, what is impact investing? What is not an impact investing? Mm-hmm. And the other thing is there is some subjectivity to what you may find as an impact investment may not be an impact investment to me, or at least may not be something that I'm passionate about.
Sure. That makes sense. Is that just because there's varying degrees of like people who are strict on the term, or
we could talk for an hour on this.
Sure.
here's where I, some people are very strict on it, and I could get into this intellectual discussion. To me, the way I've weeded through all that, what's impact, what's not, is, look, I would love for an impact investment to have intentionality and recognizing that that business is impacting the world in some form or fashion. Number two, and ideally you want them to be doing it for good. Two would be this idea that there are stated goals that they are trying to hit that are apart from pure financial goals. And then I think there needs to be transparency and reporting out on how that business or investment is actually impacting those other non-financial goals. And to me, at least if you start at that framework, you may find stuff that doesn't fit in that, which I'd probably question whether how impactful it is.
I know you worked at CNL for quite a while, right? How many years did you do?
I was
at CNL?
19 years.
19 years. So did you pretty much go from school to CNL?
So prior to that, yes, pretty much. Prior to that, I was in the mutual fund industry for close to 2 years.
Okay.
At a large mutual fund complex outside of Chicago, which through a bunch of acquisitions is now part of Invesco.
But the vast majority of your career at CNL, and CNL is not an impact-based.
So it's a very interesting question because I would tell you, in fact, I would say a CNL probably fits into what my parents would consider an impact company.
Okay.
The core values, the leadership.
A CNL, just for listeners, stands for?
It actually doesn't stand for anything.
Really?
The company originally was Centennial something or other. There was a bankruptcy. They need to change the name. So I think the unofficial is commercial net lease.
Okay.
Which is the type of lease structure that they've historically signed. So that's what CNL or cannot lose, check never late. There's a lot of jokes that we used to say on the road when we would raise capital from investors.
So right.
Where were we going? I totally lost my train of thought on that.
CNL, the difference between CNL and an impact business.
Yeah. So, I mean, great place to start a career. I mean, I was there for 19 years and they're great people. And I would say what they have done is a wonderful business. They've been moral and ethical along the way. And in fact, on the community side, the exemplary in how they have modeled their actions and what they do. But I was an executive there. So I was in the heart of it. And all of that was true. But I would say, I think companies can go one step further. And that is this intentionality of let's make a difference, not just in the community on the side, but in our line of business, let's make a difference there, whatever product or service that you provide. And then let's make sure that we put it into our metrics. Let's make sure we report on it and measure it. And so, you know, for example, and I will tell you, this is probably when originally impact investing, which I wouldn't have called it that, this would have been probably 5 years prior to me leaving CNL. So that would put it, I don't know, call it 2008-ish, somewhere in there. By that point, we had probably been involved with, I'm going to round a number, probably $8 billion worth of seniors housing. And I remember there, you know, we had a huge impact on the lives of these residents. Now, we were the landlord. We weren't running the places. But I remember thinking, why don't we articulate that investors not only are making a return on this, but metaphorically and literally, we're tucking in thousands of elderly people all across the United States. And when you think about that in that context, that's powerful, especially when you think about what the collective, that generation has served or done, you know, throughout the American history. And we're able to do what we do today because of them. And so when I go back, that was the first kind of thoughts of, man, we're doing more than just raising capital. We're doing more than just providing a return to investors. We are creating opportunities for these businesses to serve, in this case, seniors, and in their later part of their lives, bring dignity to them in a big way.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a marketing guy, so right. It's hard for me to turn off my marketing brain when right. I hear people talk about why they do things and, you right. know, their motivations, things like that. And I, in the few years that we've worked together on some of the initiatives at Common Good, it's just one of those mind-blowing things to me where you're just like, why wouldn't you? If I was in financial services and I was just reading where the direction the wind was blowing, and I just turned on my marketing brain a little bit, and I say, okay, I have these two investments. Mm-hmm. One comes with this realistic, measurable, feel-good aspect that I can market, and the other one just has a number at the end. Why wouldn't you jump in fully to?
I think you would, because
one is more known,
yeah,
historically, yeah. Or
well, so I mean, I think that's why we started Common Good, was because we saw that there were legitimate, real investments that with real potential return that investors could access, but for whatever reason, that wasn't being shown to financial advisors, wealth advisors, multifamily offices. And so they didn't really have even the decision to make.
Sure.
Well, that's starting to change. And so, and everybody's a different spot, but I would say, you know, most people have to get over this, wait, can you actually make money? Which is again, funny to me, because then it makes you go, so if you make money, are you simply making it by doing something bad? Well, we know that's not the case.
Right.
So, and then the other thing is there are, as an advisor, there are legal compliance type mindset that you got to think about. And so I said it earlier on this podcast, you're trained in the financial services industry. When it comes to constructing a portfolio, you leave your emotions out.
Sure.
You leave your heart out.
Right.
In fact, because that's the way you protect it. And the only place you bring your heart into, which advisors do in a wonderful way, is Mr. and Mrs. Client, what are your passions? What do you want to leave as a legacy? How can we do that through charitable intent? And so that's where the heart comes in. But as soon as you come back and say, well, let's build a portfolio so that someday or even currently you can do that with your charitable dollars, walls go up, heart goes off, emotions, passion, let it fly, get out of here.
Sure. So, but that doesn't make any sense to me from the perspective of like the RIA, because the more your client I would assume, the more your client is invested in their portfolio, the better the chance they're going to build on it and stick with it, right?
So that's what is happening and will continue to happen in a much bigger way.
Sure.
But you have to break through, in our case, these intermediaries who control the access to those investors.
Right.
Or you go direct to those investors. And you're seeing that being done in other platforms. For us, we are staying in this channel of intermediaries because, look, we think it's smart for investors to have financial advisors.
Oh, yeah.
They bring professionalism and, you know, a host of things, as well as if you can get financial advisors to start having this discussion with their investors, they don't have one investor. They have 250 investors. They have 500 investors. You can scale this so much quicker that route versus us picking off
investor
one
by investor.
Investor and after another.
Right. That totally makes sense. What's the most satisfying part of this work? Has there been a specific moment where you're like, wow, I can measure that. I just heard a story and this means this worked. It might not work for everybody, but it worked this time.
Yeah. I mean, I could probably give you 100 examples.
Sure.
So, you know, it's all the way from visiting some of the assets that this capital has acquired. For example, we visit a number of them, but one of them was specifically in Tampa. And I remember them walking us through this was a affordable housing complex, and just hearing what the capital was changing, as well as making sure that there were management teams and hearts around there who were trying to drive these change. And honestly, it was as simple as this in one example. They said, if you would have seen the laundry rooms that these residents have to walk, and this is not like in, this is not in their, in their house or in their apartment. It's, you know, connected.
Sure.
It, and we saw one of them. They're dirty, they're dingy, probably not safe. And it's simply going in there going, this is not acceptable. We need people to be able to go in to have a washing and dryer and in a place that's safe and comfortable and pleasing to the eye. And so just changing that all the way to, yeah, let's put in a dog park. A lot of these residents have dogs, or let's put together a dog park. I mean, also they extends to let's put together parks for the kids as well. So sure, you have that side of the equation. And then I'll just go even personally, because my wife and I have started to invest this way, obviously. And I mean, obviously I've got a bunch of money in Common Good to get this off and running. But when we go at the level where an investor is going today and they put capital into a fund and then ultimately get reports that talk about how that fund is performing, oftentimes there are also some type of either pros or numbers that talk about the impact. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you read that report and see what the return is, and then I would say today for me, I mean, and I don't want to diminish this because that return is really important, but I will tell you, I get way more joy out of reading who's being impacted by that capital. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you for me, and I actually pause before I'm going to say this, because I don't want to turn people off by this. But if for whatever reason that investment had a bad quarter or two, for example, through the COVID crisis, I mean, you got to live with it as an investor anyways. There's nothing you can do.
Right. It's going to happen here and there. Yeah, right.
Totally.
For sure.
But the fact that it went down, and I know in this one example that we have capital in affordable housing and some workforce housing, and to see that the way that they are treating the residents, both from a COVID perspective and from a, hey, let's figure out how we can make, you know, these payments more doable or whatnot, it makes you feel like you're part of the solution.
And it's an investment that, you know, no matter what, time's going to heal.
Yeah, I think it's going to be fine. I mean, yeah,
it's probably going to be better than fine, right? I would imagine.
Yep. Yep.
For sure. Switching gears just a little bit, what do you like to do for fun? Work aside,
yeah,
what is Jeff Schaefer spending his time on?
Yeah, so this has changed over the years. If you would have known me when I was an executive up till I was about 40-ish, I still am driven, but I was highly driven. So if I
was described yourself like as a workaholic, right?
Yeah, I was at one point. Oh yes.
Okay.
But it wasn't just work. It was everything. So I would have been, I mean, first of all, I was a workaholic. So let's start with that. You know, in the middle of that, I went back and got an MBA as an executive. I would go run marathons.
I mean, these are all good things.
They're all
taken right. Right.
And that's the problem is I didn't take them in the healthy spot. So I just want to paint that picture and be very, very transparent. Today, actually, because it's pretty shocking to me, even as I think about it, I read a ton. So I enjoy that. In fact, I enjoy more alone time than I ever have. And if you had known me, you do know me, but even if you know me in the past, most people think that I'm an extrovert. Probably not. I clearly can play that role, but to me, to go read, I love to read either business books. I don't know. I'm sorry. You said not a business.
No, that's fine.
Or I love to read biographies, that kind of stuff, or psychology type stuff. We bought 7 acres out from here in a place called Geneva, Florida. I rented a tractor yesterday or 2 days ago and had a backhoe on it and a shovel or scoop, whatever you call it. And so I got to move dirt around. So I love doing that kind of stuff. In the last 2 months, I've started to do some woodworking. Again, this is really bringing me back to my Oregon days, because that was what my dad used to do. I took, you know, shop class, which is so opposite from my career. It's all been numbers and wearing suits and this kind of stuff. And
sure,
I made my wife a picnic table because she wanted that. So that, and then I do love to spend time with my family. My kids are just about, well, one of them is in college. Our son's a senior in high school. And so, you know, we love to go do stuff outdoors, love to go throw the football around. You know, a perfect Saturday to me would be wake up, go exercise, which I've not been as good on that as I used to be. Walk down to the farmer's market with my wife. Probably not buy much, probably get some kettle corn, probably buy a few plants or two, come back, plant them, probably go swimming in our pool because we live in Florida when it's hot, probably grill out and watch a movie with the family. And that would be a phenomenal Saturday.
Sure. Another thing I know about you that is a passion, that isn't necessarily a business passion. I think it mixes here and there, but is prison ministry.
Correct.
And my parents worked for Campus Crusade for quite a while. At one point, my dad was in charge of the prison ministry there years ago.
Did you tell me that before?
I don't know.
I don't think you did.
At one point, he was director of national ministry. So it was like all the ministries, but they definitely spent a couple years focused on prison ministry. And you had a great story with Ping Liu, I think is how you say his last name, which I think was like episode 12. If you haven't heard it, go check out that episode. But yeah, prison ministry, is this something you've always been interested in? Or was there like an inciting moment or somebody who got in your ear about it?
Back in college, I was looking at going into the FBI.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You wanted to be like not a police officer, but a
FBI agent. Although there was a very specific unit that I was interested in.
Okay.
And that was called the Behavioral Science Unit. And it's where they would, I mean, it's like a little bit gruesome to say, but it's where they would track criminals. And specifically, I think one of the things was serial killers. So I was always intrigued just in that FBI type work. And so I don't know. Then when I went to school, they called him the Chuck Colson Scholar. So this was actually a gentleman. In fact, I can picture him today. I can't remember his name. They basically award a scholarship to somebody who is released from prison and they get to go to school for 4 years at Wheaton College, which is where I went. So I got to meet this guy. In fact, I remember this day he had been in drinking and he hit somebody and killed him, but he was given a second chance. And then out of that, I started going into prisons from my freshman year in college.
This has been a long time.
Yeah, the first time I went in, it was, and by the way, I should preface it, that would have been in 92, probably. Prison work was not cool in the least bit back sure. then. In fact, if anything, it was, you better be really careful. Don't give these guys too much information. So we went through some training and then we drove for spring break. We drove from Chicago down to Florida here, went to a maximum security outside of Lake Okeechobee. And so that was my first time in a prison. And then from that time, especially around college and several years after, I would try to go into the prison system quite a bit, turn more into financially supporting that as I've gotten older.
Supporting organizations.
Yes. Thank you. And then probably 10 years ago, I started going here to the local actual jail. And then it's just been always been in my heart from there. So people ask me, why is it? I'll give you two answers. One is I grew up in a family where my dad would tell me he loved me and he believed in me. And a lot of these guys just, they need that.
Sure. They've never heard it before.
Never heard it. Now, some of them have, to be fair.
Or maybe heard the opposite.
Yeah. And then I would say, so that's one thing is I just think these guys need somebody not only to say that to them, but they really then need somebody to walk with them once they get released.
Sometimes you just need somebody to ask you, why aren't you doing it? I know you could. You know what I mean? Type of thing.
Right.
Like just to put it in your brain that this is a possibility.
Yeah. Well, it's a belief.
It's amazing.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. You, it's very easy to talk yourself into thinking that something is not possible. And all it really takes is one person to just crack that shell and say, what are you talking about? Yeah. Of course it's possible type of thing.
Well, and if you think about even in America today, you know, there's political issues, there's racial issues. I mean, all those are real. But if you, and not to make this simplistic because it's complicated, but if you go back to the family unit and if you had a mom and dad who, or some derivative of that, who was there for you, pouring into you, telling you they believe in you, showing you through words and action, I think we'd live in a different world.
I mean,
it doesn't fix everything completely. Right. But no, the power of words, the power of connectedness, you know, having connections is huge. The last thing I will say, if I were to really tell you why I think prison ministry and formerly incarcerated men and women are in my heart. It was freshman year. I think God just put it in my heart and it's never left. So nice. I am still waiting to see how that part of the story ends, or not ends, maybe
progresses
here at Common Good. As I've mentioned on other podcasts, I would love to have a fund that invests in formerly incarcerated men or women, either directly as entrepreneurs or in businesses that specifically hire a disproportionate amount of those men and women who were released from prison. So to be determined, hopefully we'll come back in, I don't know, sometime from now, and we can show that it's a reality.
Definitely. Well, I had kind of a bunch of the questions that you typically ask your guests in reserve, just in case we didn't have enough to talk about. But we've had plenty to talk about, Jeff. Plenty. We might have to do a part two here. And
we can do that.
But I wanted to throw one question at you that's a big question, because that's what you do to your guests.
Yes,
you throw
I
big
do.
Questions at them and just let them go. You got any good life advice for me or the listeners? Anything you've learned over the course of your 30 years in business, roughly?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to think about this very hard. I'm just going to tell you what immediately popped in my
throw
brain.
Throw it at me.
So I lived in a world for the first 40 years of my life as if probably words, emotions, stuff that you can't see or touch, that not that they're not real.
They weren't important.
Not even that they weren't important.
Okay.
But they really didn't impact me.
Mm-hmm.
Like I could
you could turn them off.
I could turn them off.
Right.
And when I was 40, and this actually may be, if we do a follow-up, this may be an interesting discussion. What I realized is those things that I can't always see and touch are maybe even more real than things that I can see and touch.
And sometimes those are the best things.
They are.
Yeah.
And if my wife was here right now, she would laugh her head off because I'm still in this journey of allowing my heart and emotions to be open more so than they are today. And they definitely have been opened a whole lot more the last 7 years, but I'm still not done. So what I would say to you, put that into words based on what you asked me. I think valuing that emotions, that stress, that if you live life trying to put a shield around yourself and act like that stuff doesn't matter, number one, it does matter and it is impacting me, even though I said it wasn't. And then two, which I'm still trying to unlock, is I think there'll be more freedom and joy as you let that stuff in. Which is interesting because we are, and this is not a plug, but it just ties into this. My wife has been writing a book about kind of this journey into impact investing. And it one of the things that talks about changing fear and greed to joy and freedom. And I think that is clearly been true for my life as it relates to impact investment, the capital that I've put into actual impact investments.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still working on making that joy and freedom, allowing that into other parts of my life, apart from just the pure capital that I invest into impact investing. So it's a timely question that you asked this.
Nice. Well, I appreciate your insight and the knowledge you bring. Certainly the knowledge in this industry. I've learned a lot in the last 2 years and continue to learn. I'm not sure I'll ever get there with all the regulation stuff.
Right.
Just because it's so antithetical to everything I do on a daily basis.
Yes.
I just want to scream all the benefits out loud. And in this industry, you legally can't do it.
I know. Trust
it's
me.
It's wild.
It's a frustration. And by the way, thank you to you, because you're the one who listens to all these podcasts, takes out all the ums and makes us sound like we know what we're doing. So also very much appreciate you and what you've been doing.
I appreciate that. Don't forget to subscribe to A New Lens with Common Good Capital on your podcast app of choice. And please rate and review us on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. This will help new listeners find the show and hopefully put them on the path to a more fulfilling portfolio within the impact investing space. Thanks again, Jeff.
This podcast is a production of Common Good Capital and does not constitute an offer or a solicitation of an offer.
such offer would only be made through a private placement memorandum. Prospective investors in private placement securities should be aware that making an investment is speculative and involves a high degree of risk, including the risk of losing all or a portion of an investment. Investments of this nature are illiquid and subject to substantial restrictions upon transferability.